Hello again. Good to see you all. goodness. Okay, so I'm going to start by telling you a joke that I heard on satellite radio. It's church-friendly, one of the few church-friendly jokes they have on there. There's this comic, and he was talking about a centaur. Do you guys know what a centaur is? It's a beast, a being that is half man and half horse, right? And so this comic was saying, you know what the problem is when you have a centaur? When it gets sick, you don't know whether to take it to the doctor or the veterinarian. I thought it was funny. And he went on to say, you know, if the centaur breaks its leg and you bring it to the vet, you know, the vet's going to suggest something not very nice. So the centaur goes off and goes, oh, Wilbur, I want a second opinion. I'm going to the doctor now. Okay. The reason I told that joke is all because I wanted to say the word second opinion. Because we all need a second opinion from time to time about our relationship with reality and our place in it. So this year, as we start a new decade in 2020, we're starting with 2020 vision, where we're getting a second opinion about anything in our lives, any opinion or any thought or any truth that we're telling ourselves that may not necessarily be true. We're getting a second opinion about it and seeing if we can revise it to bring forth greater and greater love and magnificence into not only our lives, but into the lives of all beings. So a second opinion about what? I would start with forming a second opinion about reality. Who knows what reality is or what absolute reality is? It's, you know, I say this all the time, but it's not only stranger than we think, it is stranger than we can think. And to amplify Heisenberg, not that he needs it, who said that quote, it's not only more magnificent than we think, it is more magnificent than we can think. Reality is wholeness. It is perfection. It is that which embraces everything. It is infinite. I think Ernest Holmes and other perennial teachers said it well. You know, perennial wisdom is wisdom that keeps popping up like perennial flowers year after year in different various teachings all over the globe. But Ernest Holmes said, there is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. I'll say that after me. There is only one life. That life is God's life. That's life. That life is perfect. That life is my life now. And to translate that, what that means to perhaps more modern ears, is that there's one life, a wholeness that embraces everything, and that life is perfect. Perfect meaning inclusive of everything. So everything that we see, everything that we hear, everything that we feel is part of that one life of God. Or of love, or whatever word you want to use, absolute reality. It is perfect even if it seems imperfect, because there can't be God. If God is infinite, there can't be God and something else. You get that? And if infinity fills everything, there can't be infinity and then something else. Infinity is the sum total of all of the numbers ever invented, infinitely on, right? If you had negative one and positive one, you get what? Zero. Good. Yeah, so God is like the void, the zero that holds everything but is also nothing at the same time. Whoa. Wrap your head around that if you can, right? Okay, that is reality. That's the reality that we get to live and move and have our perfect, all-inclusive being in. And how wonderful that is. How wonderful it is to know that and to get excited about it and to feel it. You know, I need a second opinion about that from time to time, because sometimes I get so caught up in what's going on and I think that this is reality. I watch the news and I think, oh, this is reality. But then if we're able to step back and see that there is this greater reality that includes everything, that is love itself, that is wholeness itself, then that brings us into a greater place of receptivity and acceptance for our good and for the good of all beings. So there's all of this going on all of the time. And we are one with it. Do you believe that? All the time? I see a lot of people looking like they don't know what to say. Perhaps because I don't know what to say. No, we are one with that blessed reality of love and oneness and wholeness that is inclusive of everything. We don't always act that way, but we are one with it. We are one with it whether we know it or not. You know, I listened to a lot of mystical teachers yesterday on YouTube and other sources and read some stuff. And I think that one of the best descriptions I heard of our relationship with reality was when I read the story of Ramana Maharshi, who is a Hindu mystic, lived in India. And he died in 1950. The story of him, his waking up, his awakening to the nature of reality and his place in it. And Ramana Maharshi was walking around India, minding his own business, and all of a sudden he got this overwhelming feeling like he was going to die. And so he went home and he lay on the bed and he said, if I die, I'll lose my parents, I'll lose my family, I'll lose my possessions, I'll lose my home, I'll lose everything. But after all of those, I'll lose this or I'll lose that, he said, but something still remains. Something still remains. And that something that still remains is who we really are, that transcends all possibilities, that transcends even the possibility of death. That something that remains is our existence. It's the I am presence that we sing about together. We sing about together, and it is the I am presence that is aware and aware that it is aware. It is the I am presence that is beyond any qualifiers that we can put on it. You know, I am love, I am peace, I am joy. It's that, but it's so much more. It's I am before we put a qualifier on it. I am tired, I am sick, I am hungry. It's that, yet so much more, because it is everything. Are you getting this? Are you getting this? Yes. Please say you're getting this. It's like I said, it's stranger, not only stranger that we can, than we can think, but it's also, it's stranger than we can describe either. You know, we're just, my words are just fingers pointing at this great reality that is available for all of us. The I am presence, awareness, all that is who we are. So we have all that going for us. What are we going to do with it? Well, we have the appearance of free will. That's another topic, but we have something that looks a lot like free will, and we can choose what we're going to think about, because another aspect of the perennial tradition of the second opinion is that, you know, our ego is very attached to thinking that things are the way they are and that's the way they have to stay. And if we can change it at all, we need to change things by going outside of ourselves and moving things around. Whereas the perennial traditions, the wisdom traditions, will say, not so much. If something is not to our liking, if something doesn't feel right, we go within first. And we look within, and we see if we can embrace it and transcend it or transform it even. But we do that from doing the inner work. You know, the Gandhi followers say that that we lead by inner transformation. We lead our lives, we are in charge of our lives to the degree that we are willing to undergo inner transformation. And so, what do we do with this life force that has been given to us, this allness of spirit that has been given to us? Well, we use it in a way that is constructive, like it said in the reading. We use it in ways that bless ourselves and we bless all beings, and we use it through the power of our thoughts and through the power of our feelings. The two work together to create experience. Experience is created. Our experience of reality is created by our thoughts and feelings, which is belief. Right? Belief creates our experience of reality. So that sounds pretty good, right? I hope. Yeah, I hope. I mean, I hope everybody wants to believe that and wants to know that, because it certainly makes life easier when we believe that, when we can feel a sense of responsibility for what we're experiencing. However, there are times when we go to sleep, and there are times when we know the spiritual truth, but we look for exceptions. Exceptions, I said. I whispered that word because it was a bad word. We look for exceptions. We look for well, you know, I am supposed to change my insides in order to reflect something to the outside, but I don't really want to because that person over there is wrong. Sorry, I pointed at the balcony. Nobody up there, no, don't take it personally. That person over there is wrong, or this situation is wrong, or this thing is wrong in my life. We don't necessarily always want to change ourselves because it requires spiritual work, and we're not always as well schooled or as up for spiritual work as we might want to be. Am I the only one? Okay, all right. Okay. So, I've been, over the Christmas holidays, I had the opportunity to edit an interview with a gentleman whose first name is Victor and his last name is unpronounceable. I still don't know what his last name is. But he is the head of a religious organization. It's the United Religions Initiative, and it's an interfaith organization that tries to function like the original intention of the United Nations, bringing people of all faiths together and working on projects all around the world. And it's a lovely organization. It was a lovely interview, and I certainly enjoyed editing it. One of the things that stood out for me was he was talking about his life growing up. The interviewer asked him, he's a Christian, an Episcopal minister, and she asked him, you know, why that religion, why that path, how did that influence you? And he said that when he was growing up, he lived in Boston, and his father was influential in Boston, and he would have people of all faiths sitting around the dinner table all of the time. And Howard Thurman, who was one of Martin Luther King's teachers, would come and eat dinner with them as well. So people of all faiths, people of all races, colors, what have you, they were all around all the time. And when he grew up, he didn't realize that there's sometimes exclusivities in Christianity and in other religions. He just thought that everybody got along all of the time. Imagine that. So he chose Christianity because he liked the Episcopal Church tends to have a very strong social justice network, and so he liked that because he really wanted to move past the perception of exclusivity in Christianity and recognize that the teachings of Jesus are mostly about love and compassion, and this is the part that stood out for me, overturning power structures, overturning the status quo. Everybody. And it fits in with the talk about second opinions because so often the status quo is something that we have learned and something that we continually bring into our lives to create a reality that doesn't necessarily work for us. So is it possible for us to overturn limitations, overturn the status quo, overturn the power structures that we have imposed upon ourselves through our spiritual work, through our inner work, through going within, through seeing what irritates us and going within and seeing how we can reconcile that and create something greater, where irritations become gifts, where obstacles become opportunities. Everybody. You know, one of the parts of the Bible that I think is maligned a lot, I was talking about this with someone this week, so it's on my mind, is the part in the Bible where the people are selling stuff in the temple, right? If you don't know the plot, I'll tell you the basic story. People are selling stuff in the temple, and Jesus comes in, and he sees that, and he makes a whip out of cords, and he drives out the money changers, right? The sellers. He drives them out of the temple. And many, many people, I've observed, use that, they project their own stuff under that story, and they project this idea that Jesus was mad. Jesus was, I said a worse word, and then I looked and saw a child, hi! Jesus was mad, hi! Jesus was mad, and they use it as an excuse to let anger be the leading force in making changes, making social changes. And people like Martin Luther King and others know that you can't really drive out anger with anger. And look how much projection is on that, how much projection is on all of the Bible and probably all spiritual texts. I'm just more familiar with the Bible. You know, Jesus may have made a whip and said, wow, this is really fun. He may have been like a party whip, and he may have come up and he said, woohoo, money changers, out, and he overturned the tables. And it might have been like really fun for him, right? Are you believing me? Woohoo! You know, I think of it a lot like dog training. Are you laughing because you know our dogs? We have like the most untrained dogs ever. But for the breed, they're actually pretty good. They're very active dogs. But it's a lot like dog training. You know, he had to relate to the people in a level that he would understand. So when I'm hiking, several of you have had the pleasure of hiking with me and Sarah and Bartok, our dogs, and one of them will pick up something, right? Something unauthorized, Lonnie. There was a spine of a goat one time with Lonnie, and I actually let them keep that because it was so unique, but it's often something worse than that if you can manage. Just use your imagination. I won't go into it. They pick it up, and I have to act like I'm a little stern with them, and I point at them, and I say, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, right? And eventually they drop it, but there's no anger in me whatsoever. There's no anger. I just want their well-being, and I suspect that that's what Jesus was doing in the temple, that he was saying, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop that transactional consciousness, as Meister Eckhart would say, drop it, drop it. Oh, good boy, good boy, right? So why can't we say that to ourselves, right? You know, Bill, brilliant Bill. How does he do it, Jennifer? I don't know. He, and Tommy, yeah, he comes up with this thing with holding up a water glass when I'm going to speak about drop it. We do not communicate about the content of the sermon before we appear here on stage on Sunday, but he's holding up a water glass, holding up worries, holding up a perception of reality, holding up what you think is wrong with you. What if you could just say, drop it? Drop it, not the water glass necessarily, but the thoughts that you're having, the thoughts of unkindness and shame and feeling like it's hopeless. What if you could just say, drop it, just drop it, just drop it, not a big deal. With kindness, with love, without shaming yourself or even having those thoughts, just drop it, say that with me, drop it, right? So remember this. Remember how you're not mad, how you're laughing. You're saying, drop it. You can do that with yourselves. We can do that with ourselves. Whenever we're picking up a thought, letting a story run on and on in our heads, instead of getting all like, well, it's because my mother said that I was, no. Instead of getting all like that, just drop it, drop it, drop it. And when you do drop it for like 3 seconds, good boy, or good girl, or whatever it is. Okay. And if you could see my dogs, it's so cute when I'm doing drop it, their ears get really long. And then when I say good boy or good girl, they're all wiggly and happy. So I invite you to incorporate that into your spiritual practice as well, especially the all wiggly and happy part when you're dropping something. Okay. All right. The thing is, though, is that when you drop something, you're liable to pick it up again, aren't you? Right? You are liable to pick up that Mamma Mia once again. So I have found in working with the own things that I'm dropping that it's helpful to drop something physical, like, oh, I don't know, an addiction perhaps, like an addiction to caffeine and chocolate chip cookies, which I'm going through at the moment. If I'm going to drop caffeine, I need to pick up something else, something that is life-affirming and refreshing, something like water, right? If I'm going to drop morning chocolate chip cookies for breakfast, I need to pick up something else, something that is nourishing and supportive, like oatmeal. cookies. No. The same thing is true for the way that our mind works. If we're going to drop a thought that is destructive, that is harmful to ourselves or to somebody else, that is harmful to our perception of reality, it's wise to pick up something else and put it in its place. That's why we teach affirmations. That's why we encourage people to read something inspiring every day if they can. That's part of the reason we have church, so that we can encourage one another. It's our reason for existence is to come home to who we really are. And so part of that is by dropping that which doesn't serve who we really are, doesn't serve our recognition of who we really are, and picking up something that does. I was reading yesterday, or actually listening to a talk by another Hindu teacher from the Vedanta Society in New York. And Vedanta is a form of Hinduism, a non-dual teaching. And this guy said, he asked the crowd, how do you know when someone is awake? How do you know when someone is enlightened or awake? And nobody knew the answer that he was looking for. So he said, the way that I know if I am in an awakened or an enlightened state is when I close my eyes, I call forth peace. No matter what's going on, I close my eyes and I call forth peace. And when I open my eyes, I look around me and say, how can I serve? I close my eyes and call forth peace. I open my eyes and look around me and say, how can I serve? Knowing that sometimes service is letting somebody else do it. Knowing that service is sometimes resting. Knowing that sometimes service is crossing a threshold into something that is uncomfortable for us. But just allowing that absolute reality that is one with who we are to guide us towards what is right in the perfect moment. Does that make sense? So there's several tools for you. There's dropping it and then picking up. And one thing that we could pick up is an affirmation or closing our eyes and calling forth peace and then opening our eyes and saying, how can I serve in this moment? Again, that's the second opinion. You know, the ego is always asking, what can I get from this? What can I get from this moment? What can I get from this day? What can I get from this experience? Whereas the greater encompassing spirit is always moving to the place of, how can I serve this day? How can I serve this experience? How can I serve this living human being in front of me? That's one of the features of this book that I'm teaching. It's not your money. It's not your money. So somebody said, if it's not your money, Bonnie, is it my money? No, that's not the point. That's not the point of the book. One of the features of that book is that every day our life can be an offering to the divine. And I have to tell you, it's a beautiful way to go through life when I remember, when I wake up and I say, today I offer my life to the divine. Miracles happen, opportunities to serve happen, wonderful things happen. Things are transformed because I'm transforming my insides through the practice of offering. So today I wake up and offer my life to the divine. Say that after me if you'd like to. Today I wake up and offer my life to the divine. Pretty cool, right? I wake up, huh? Get it? Wake up, awakening, right? And awakening means closing your eyes and calling forth peace and opening your eyes and asking how I can serve. So today I wake up and I offer my life to the divine. And you know what the divine is, right? It's not about becoming a nun or going and living in Guam in a hut. It's the divine is everything. No matter where you are, is anybody from Guam here? I'm sorry if anybody has done that before. You're from Guam? You've been there. Okay. Okay, good to know. We'll talk. Okay, right. Did you live in a hut? Okay, yeah. We'll talk. So it's not about that. It's that anything that you do can be an offering to the divine. You know, one of the spiritual mistakes, it's actually two in one, that I find that a lot of people that I've worked with over the years have made and that I make myself all the time, is that we are either thinking not greatly enough or we are thinking not small enough. Really, in infinity, it's a paradox, so they sort of cancel each other off, but in infinity, there is no great or small. So if I do a small act of kindness, one small, tiny thing that seems like it doesn't have any impact, that is not a small thing, that is a great thing. So it's okay to think small. But it's also okay to think great, to, again, remember the magnificence of spirit that is within all of us, all of the time. We cannot chase it away. You know, we often talk about impermanence here, about how certain things, just about everything is impermanent, but impermanence, right? Get that? Impermanence is permanent. It's a condition of life. But I would say that other things are impermanent as well, and that is absolute reality. The presence of love that lives and moves has its being through us. The part of us that is permanent. Do you know the guys, the song rather, Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby? I believe that Voodoo Daddy guy sang it, right? What's that guy's name? Never mind. I'll send it to you. So, Is You Is, right? Are you? And Is You Ain't? Probably the answer to that question, like is the glass half full and half empty, is yes, right? Because because you are all of the time, and that's the absolute truth. But in the relative reality, sometimes we feel like we're not. But the truth is, coming back to the truth, coming back to the place within us that closes our eyes and calls forth peace, and then opens our eyes and says, how can I serve? That reconciles the two. That reconciles and brings forth the place that knows that we are, that I am, and I am that which is aware, and I am that which is aware that I am aware. Ernest Holmes, in his reading that Hugh did, talked about the hope of heaven. Sometimes in religious science, folks don't like the word hope, but I like it. You know, the way that people use it, they say, don't use it in religious science, they use it like a wish, like, I'm praying for this and I wish it would happen, or I hope it will happen. They say that rather than hoping or wishing it will happen, we are supposed to know that it happens. But there, Ernest Holmes goes and talks about the hope of heaven, the hope of heaven, and that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. So what is the hope of heaven? You know, somebody in Foundations class, last time I taught it, asked me if God had a shadow. And I'm like, wow, ask me an easy question, why don't you? So, but anyway, I thought about it for a minute, and then I said, God has a shadow, but God's shadow is light. And I think that God hopes. God hopes. It's not like God is sitting up there wringing its hands, worrying about us, but God hopes to express through each of us. But the thing about God's hope, just like God's shadow is light, God's hope is knowing. Knowing that all is well. Knowing that we are. Knowing that I am. Knowing that you are. Knowing that all of us is together. Knowing that we have all of these beautiful skills that create a beautiful reality for 2020 that we choose. That we choose, we are no longer at the effect of the opinions of race consciousness or the opinions of others. We are no longer at the effects of the news. We are no longer at the effect of the opinions of our family. We are no longer at the effect of anybody or anyone except for the divine. The divine that shows up in diversity, in multiplicity, in all things. Let us know that for ourselves now, and let us pray.